Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is Logan Yury, and we take a little bit of a different direction and focus on the lifestyle element in today's podcast and the mindset element, talking about dating, attachment style, breakups, and finding love or finding the right romantic partner for you. Logan is the author of the book, How to Not Die Alone, and she's the director of relationship science at the dating app Hinge. Today's conversation was one of my most enjoyable conversations around this topic, and we go through everything from why dating is harder now than ever before and how to understand the challenges of modern dating to the three dating tendencies. So to give yourself an idea on, are you a romanticizer, are you a maximizer, or are you a hesitator, and how that ties in with your attachment style, something I've touched on in previous podcasts about, are you anxious, are you avoidant, are you secure, and how those two things merge to decide what kind of person you are on the dating scene or in relationships or in marriages. And we do a full circle in today's podcast talking about the dating styles, about awareness and finding what brand or bracket you fall into or where you fall on the spectrum, to how to break up with somebody and how to navigate through that really awkward period or time. And anyone that's ever broken up with anybody will know it's a very awkward way and process to navigate through. And if you're on the receiving side, it can be potentially a very heartbreaking thing to receive. And then we go full circle towards the end on finding the right person for you and what you need to be looking for and how to avoid your prom date or the person that looks good in pictures, and how to find the slow burn, the person that you are going to have longevity with. Absolutely love this conversation. Logan's new book has so much stories, details, research on dating that I think it's a Bible, and a potentially a Bible for anyone that's trying to navigate through that uncomfortable world of particularly first dates. And there's other great books out there that I love. Attached, one we talk about in this book by, I think it's William Levine or Amir Levine, and the Five Love Languages, another one that I'm a big fan of. But today we go deep on dating, we go deep on breakups and relationships in general. So if you have ever been on a first date, if you've ever been in a relationship, if you've ever been on the receiving or giving side of a breakup, then you're going to enjoy today's conversation. So without further ado, here is Logan Yury on dating, attachment styles, how to break up with someone, and finding love. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Logan Yury. Logan is a behavioral scientist turned dating coach and the author of How Not to Die Alone. As the director of relationship science at the dating app Hinge, she leads a research team dedicated to helping people find love. After studying psychology at Harvard, she ran Google's behavioral science team, the Irrational Lab. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, Time, The Washington Post, GQ, Glamour, Vice, and on HBO and the BBC. I'm looking forward to talking all things dating, attachment styles, breakups, and finding love in today's episode. Logan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to get to know you more and to hang out for a while.
Logan, I've been so excited since we arranged this podcast, since we arranged the date for the episode, because your book, I had a proper deep dive into it over the weekend, and I just can't wait to unpack it for the audience because there's so much value in here. But before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about your backstory and kind of what led you down your current path of becoming a dating coach, you know, working at Hinge and doing everything that you're doing currently?
Absolutely, yes. And so for a long time, for many years, I've had these two interests. I've had this love for psychology and the science of decision making, what's known as behavioral science. And on the other hand, I've had this interest in dating, relationships, sex. And so after college, I pursued the first one and I worked at Google and I helped lead a team called the Irrational Lab. And this was all about taking what we know about how people make decisions. So why do people start signing up for a product and then leaving it? Or what makes people open one email and not the other? And I worked closely with the behavioral economist, Dan Ariely. And we did a lot of projects with the Google team in Dublin. And my manager at the time, Anne-Marie Farrell, is Irish. And so anyway, just mentioning that we spent a lot of time in Ireland for that project. But, you know, while I was working at Google, I was single and I was struggling with dating. Tinder had just come out and I was really trying to figure out how do I navigate this challenging new worlds of online dating apps. And so what I've ended up doing for the greater part of the last decade is applying those two things. And so I take the psychology of how people make decisions and I apply it to dating to help people get into great relationships. And so first I was at Google. Then I ended up going to Airbnb, where I worked on things like user trust and booking. Then I worked as a resident at TED. I've been working as a dating coach. And then over the last few years, I wrote my book about how to find somebody. And I also now work as a researcher leading a team at Hinge.
I love it. And I said to you just before we went on air that when I was going through the book, I was thinking when I was single, I'm like, this is literally a reference point for everything. And when we dive into the dating tendencies in particular, because that was the point that I think if I had that knowledge when I was single, it would have made such a huge difference. But before we do that, talk to us about why dating is harder now than ever before.
Yes. And so this is one of the controversial chapter titles of the book, Why Dating is Harder Now Than Ever Before. But I really think it's true. And so, yes, it's easier to meet people. You can go on a dating app and see hundreds or potentially thousands of people that you could match with. But it becomes really hard to know, who should I choose? Who should I commit to? Should I stop now or should I keep looking? And so really, there's all this pressure. There's this concept of the paradox of choice where too much choice really overwhelms us and leads us to either doubt our decisions or to feel so stressed that we make no decision at all. And so that's really one of the biggest ones, is all the choices. Another thing is that we have higher expectations than ever about what we get from our partners and about what we get from relationships. And so people used to go to their communities, their siblings, their parents, their friends for all different things. And now we expect our partner to be our best friend, our co-parent. We expect them to fulfill all of these different roles in our lives. And at the same time, we expect to have these transcendental, you know, transformative relationships where all of our greatest needs and desires are really self-actualized in this one relationship. And so higher than ever number of choices, higher than ever expectations on one partner, and higher than ever expectations of relationship, it really leads to a recipe for stress.
I'm very curious, just from your own expertise, Logan, when it comes to a kind of a misconception around relationships in particular, is the expectations being misaligned one of the major things you see, or is there something that comes above that?
Yes. So in the book, I have this framework called the three dating tendencies, and these are the most common dating blind spots I see. And so as a dating coach, people would come in, of course, pre-pandemic, sit on my couch and tell me, these are all the problems that I'm struggling with. And what I found was that even though these dating coaching clients came from a lot of different walks of life, a lot of them suffered from the same issues. And that's what I've categorized into this three dating tendencies framework. And each of those has to do with unrealistic expectations. And so the first one is the romanticizer. They have unrealistic expectations of relationships. The second one is the maximizer. They have unrealistic expectations of their partner. And the third one is the hesitator. They have unrealistic expectations of themselves. And I've really found that unrealistic expectations create a huge problem, because even when things are great, people wonder, what else is out there? Who else can I be? Should I keep looking?
From your experience, and I'm very curious just because, again, you're the expert in the field, what do you find is the most common from the romanticizer, the maximizer, the hesitator, or do you find that it's quite an equal split amongst people?
It's a great question, because I would say when I was doing dating coaching, I saw a lot of romanticizers and a lot of maximizers. And just to get into it a little bit more for your listeners, so the romanticizer is the person who loves love. They are waiting for the soulmate. They believe that there's one person out there for you and they will find you, likely in some sort of romantic comedy style meet cute, like you both reach for the perfect tomato at the farmer's market. And the issue with the romanticizer is that at the beginning of a relationship, when things are easy and you're in the honeymoon period, you're fine. But when the romanticizer's relationship hits that inevitable rough spot, suddenly they say, this couldn't possibly be my soulmate, because if it were, we wouldn't be having this issue. And the second type, the maximizer, their thing is that they're always wondering what else is out there, right? I like my girlfriend, but could I be with somebody 5% hotter? Could I be with somebody 5% more interesting, 5% more ambitious? And they're always wondering, you know, could I do better? Could I upgrade? And they never actually just commit and invest in the relationship in front of them. And so maximizers are a very common type, both in Silicon Valley, where I live, and among the people who would seek out dating coaching. But now that my book has been out for around 2 months, I've been hearing from tons of hesitators. And that's because hesitators are the people who think, I'm not ready to date. And so no, they're not going to invest the time and money to come see a dating coach, but there are many of them out there. And they've been especially exacerbated by the pandemic because they think, oh, I'll just take a year off from dating. It just became another excuse for them to not put themselves out there.
In that chapter of the book, you talked about discovering your dating blind spots. And that's exactly how I felt when I was reading it. I was, thankfully, we'll talk about attachment styles later, a little bit more on the anxious side and being a maximizer. And I think had I known that 4 or 5 years ago, it would have made a huge difference, because you would have realized that, oh, this is me. It's I'm the problem, not realizing that, you know, it's not the relationships that are the problem. It's you're the common denominator. But what do you think, Logan? Again, I'm not sure on more from your personal experience with this, but what, and I know it's a very deep psychological question, but like, what causes our dating tendencies, or what are some of the trends that allows people to kind of fall into one or the other? Or is there any kind of stories that you have that kind of symbolize that? I'm curious, just because as someone that was reading your book, finished it over the weekend, but went back on chapter 2 on the maximizer, I'm like, why was I like that? Was the inevitable question that came. Is that something that you've came across in your line of dating coaches or coaching with people?
Well, Brian, I have to say, I'm not surprised that you're a maximizer. I mean, I don't know you, but just from the fact that, you know, you are a go-getter who has a podcast, obviously, you know, you're big in the fitness and wellness and self-development phase. And a lot of people in that realm are maximizers, because they go through life and they say, I'm going to do research. I'm going to improve my life. I am going to get 5% fitter or 5% healthier, which is great. I love self-improvement. I'm very drawn to that community as well. But when it comes to our partners, it's just something different, because if you always think, what else is out there? How can I upgrade? You're not actually looking at the person in front of you, valuing who they are, and investing in the relationship. And that's actually one of the biggest issues among maximizers, that they think that there's some sort of percentage, like it's 99% choosing the perfect person and then you're set. Well, that's not true. It's maybe, I'm not going to throw a number out there, but it's some percentage who you choose, and then it's another big percentage about making it work. And so if you're somebody out there saying, how can I find the perfect person? I just need to date 10 more people and then I'm sure I'll find the perfect person for me. Well, what if you've already dated somebody great? What if you've already dated somebody who could be a wonderful long-term partner? And instead, what you're not doing is you're not investing to build the relationship you want. And so my advice for that person is, you can have high standards, you can have high expectations, but at a certain point, you need to choose someone, you need to invest your time, energy, resources, and you need to build that relationship instead of waiting for the perfect person to just come along.
That's fantastic advice. And one of the stories that I had to tell myself, and I did this with business and fitness, was, you know, grass isn't greener on the other side. Grass is green on the side that you look after. And yet it's very easy to forget that when it comes to dating and when it comes to relationships. You've given me a nice little kind of tie-in with the romanticizer and the fantasy style and how Disney has lied to us. Talk about how to overcome the romanticizer tendency.
Yes. So for the romanticizer, I completely understand why people are like this. If you start looking around for clues in our society, you'll see that romanticizer philosophy is all around us. Disney movies are all about the prince will find you and he'll give you the kiss and he'll save your life and you'll get married. Or Prince Eric will hear Princess Ariel's beautiful singing voice and she'll save him from his shipwreck. And then they'll be meant to be and they'll live happily ever after. And so we're getting all of these cues that love is about finding one person. When you find your soulmate, it'll be effortless. Love will be passionate, great sex for the rest of your life without putting any work into it. And so we're really bombarded with this idea of what love should quote unquote look like. Then when you get into a real relationship with real problems and real messiness, and it doesn't match your expectations of what you thought love was, suddenly you say, this must be the wrong person or the wrong relationship. And so truly for the romanticizer, it's about shifting your mindset. It's about going from what's known as the soulmate mindset to the work it out mindset. The work it out mindset is the idea that relationships are work. If you feel like it's work, then you're doing it right. And that, of course, you need to apply effort to get the results you want. It's not just that there's a magical person out there, and if you had found them, then it would be easy.
And then when it comes to the opposite end of that coin, the maximizer, so don't let perfect be the enemy of great, I know is the line that you talk about. How would one overcome the maximizer? Because I know from my audience and from talking to people, and I am far outside this realm of expertise, this is you, Logan, all the way. But in terms of my experience of chatting to people, most previous episodes of the podcast where we've touched on different topics, people tend to fall into romanticizer or maximizer, even though they're not the language we've used that I think we'll definitely use going forward. But speak about or talk about how to overcome the maximizer tendency then for people.
Absolutely. So yes, for the maximizer, I said this a little bit, but I can really drill down into it, which is instead of thinking there's somebody out there for me who's perfect and I just need to keep dating, I just need to do more research, I just need to switch to this app or go on this type of date and then suddenly I'll find this perfect person. What if you actually change it and you say, I could make a life with many people. There are many great potential partners for me. And what I really need to do is choose one of them, invest in the relationship, and build it into something great. And so what you can do is you can look back and you can say, is there somebody that I've already dated who would have made a great long-term partner? Who is that person? That person now becomes your meaningful benchmark. That becomes the person who sets the bar for who you want to be with in the future. And the next time that you meet someone who you like as much or more than that meaningful benchmark, you should commit to that person and try to build a relationship with them and make it work. And the reason behind this is something called the secretary problem. And this is a mathematical riddle that basically says to you, if you were hiring a secretary and there were 100 candidates and you had to go through each one at a time, and after each one say yes or no, what's the point at which you should stop looking? You don't want to stop too soon because maybe you don't know how great the rest of the candidates are. You don't want to stop too late because what if all the good candidates have stopped you by, passed you by? And so the mathematically correct answer here is that you go through the first 37 secretaries, you figure out who the meaningful benchmark is, and then you hire the next person who is as good or better than that meaningful benchmark. And if you do the same thing in dating, you'll realize that you've likely already dated somebody great. And the next time you find someone who you like as much or more than them, it's time to invest in that person. Stop focusing on the grass is always greener and start focusing on, as you said, watering the grass in front of you.
I love it. And one of the things when I was reading the book through the first run through was thinking about attachment styles. And I was into about chapter 4 or 5. And I'm like, oh, this is reminding me of, you know, attachment styles and attached. And again, another book that I'm a big fan of. But you covered it. And then it just popped in chapter 6 or 7. I'm like, oh, you're already on the ball with this. Talk about attachment styles for people and how it links in with their dating tendencies. Because I think being aware of that, and I know very similar to realizing if you're a romanticizer, a hesitator, or if you're a maximizer, having that knowledge and being able to put yourself into that bracket. And I know you've got the different questionnaires and quizzes within the book, which is really helpful for figuring out what you fall into. But speak to us about attachment styles, because I think this links beautifully with the dating tendencies.
Thank you. Yes. And it's great to hear that you've read the book Attached. This is actually kind of behind the scenes. When I was writing my book, my publisher said, there's already this great book Attached. There's already the book Hold Me Tight. Why do you need to include attachment theory in your book? This is something that people can get elsewhere. And I really fought with her and I said, this is so important to me. This has changed my life. This has changed my client's life. This is one of the best research elements of relationship science. And I really need it to be included in the book. And it's just something that helps a lot of people unlock their romantic future. And so the basic idea of attachment theory is that we develop these relationships with our caregivers when we're a kid. And there's three types. There's anxiously attached, avoidant attached, and securely attached. And basically what they each mean is that the anxiously attached kid is somebody who constantly needs to be reaching out for reassurance. They want to be told, I'm here, I'm not going to abandon you. And they constantly need to be in touch with the person who they love. The avoidant attached person is afraid that they're going to be abandoned. And so they push people away and they really want to be independent. And they think, if I don't need you, then you can't hurt me if you leave. And the securely attached person thinks, I'm comfortable being close to you. I'm comfortable with intimacy, but I also want my space and my independence. And so this started with developmental psychology, with looking at babies and their moms. But over the last 60 years, it's really turned into something that can be applied to adult romantic relationships. And so if you think about each of those three types and how they act in relationships, you probably start to recognize some of your behavior, your friend's behavior, even the behavior of your exes. And so that anxiously attached person, they're the ones texting you, Brian, have you landed from your flight? Brian, why haven't you texted me? Brian, what's going on? Right? Constantly want to be in touch with you and want reassurance that you're not going to leave. Somebody who's avoidant attached, they might say, Brian, I really need my space, or Brian, I need to focus on work. Brian, you have this annoying habit that I'm going to pretend is a deal breaker, and so I'm going to push you away. And so they're always looking for space. But the person who's securely attached, they're in the middle. And so they do want to spend time with you, but they also want to spend time with themselves. They want to feel close to you, but they're also not going to smother you. And so securely attached people really have this great balance in between the two. What ends up happening is that our society is about 50% full of securely attached people, which is great, right? There's a lot of them, but they get snatched up into relationships and they stay in them. What ends up happening is that a lot of the dating pool is full of people who are anxiously attached and avoidant attached. These people then start dating each other. This can be kind of a disaster because they are reinforcing each other's worst tendencies. The avoidant attached person says, you're going to smother me and I'm not going to have a life. And the anxiously attached person is saying, you're going to pull away from me and I have to chase you. And so they keep reinforcing each other's worst tendencies. And often it's not until those people can work on becoming secure themselves, or they can find a secure partner, that they actually break out of that really dangerous loop and they can find the relationship that they've been seeking.
That's such a fantastic breakdown. And as somebody that kind of defaulted to the avoidant attachment style and had to spend years trying to move towards the secure, but having the awareness around it was really helpful. And very similar to the dating tendencies, knowing your attachment style, whether you're avoidant, anxious, or secure, is so helpful when you're on or in the dating scene. I'm curious, Logan, from your own personal standpoint, because of where you're at now with your life, when you were starting your dating journey first yourself, you obviously are very heavy into the research. You understand the, you know, amount of experiences through working with people and as a dating coach, and your own philosophies around hesitating, you know, maximize tendency and the romanticizer. But is there, and obviously very familiar with the attachment theory, but when you were dating yourself, what's the one thing that you wish you had known back then that you know now?
Brian, I'm happy to answer that. But, you know, I'm fascinated to hear that you recognize that you had avoidant attachment tendencies and that you were able to work through them. And I think I would be personally really curious to hear, how were you able to do that work? Because I know a lot of people read my book and listen to my talks and they say, I recognize myself in this, but I don't know how to make the change.
For me, it was, the first was the awareness around it and being able to put a label and a title on it that, oh, this is my behaviors, you know, to watch your ego in action, just watch your last three reactions. And for me, it was a case of looking at my relationships and how I was showing up consistently in all of them. And I would constantly have this avoidant attachment style and pushing people away. And it made me realize that in terms and in order to get secure, I had to get very clear on the target. And once I had the language of avoidant and secure, I knew where my starting point was and I knew where I wanted my finish point to be. So a lot of it in between was different books, different podcasts, you know, doing the self work and looking internally and asking, you know, what are the insecurities that are making me push people away? Why can't I let people close? You know, a lot of it for me was down to kind of self-worth issues, not feeling like I deserved it for a multitude of reasons. And once I was able to kind of get to the root of that and digging down, now I'm compressing 4 or 5 years in a few short sentences. But once I was able to get to the root of some of the self-worth issues and some of the insecurities that I had, and the language that I was able to put in it, and understanding where my starting point was and where I wanted to go, that work and navigating through. And then, you know, when you found the right person, it was a combination of finding the right person mixed with me being the right person in the right place at the right time, a combination of everything. But it spent years. But for me, it was very much a case of having the language and then doing the work to get through it, if that makes sense, Logan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's really inspirational. And I think a lot of people will enjoy hearing about it. And it's true. Language is so important. Having a name for this, saying, I've been waiting to date during the pandemic because I'm a hesitator, or I have unrealistic expectations of relationships, I'm a romanticizer. It really empowers you to recognize what's holding you back and then make changes in your life to overcome them. And that's absolutely true with attachment theory. And so I love hearing about the fact that you were learning about avoidant attachment styles. And you said, seems like this is what I always do. Seems like I'm always pushing people away. Seems like I'm coming up with excuses for why I just can't accommodate a relationship right now. And I think your story is an excellent one, because it does take time, right? Recognizing a problem is only the first step. And that's why I love behavioral science as a field and as a way of looking at the world, because it doesn't just say information is everything, right? Information is the first part. You need to be aware of it, but then you need to actually create an environment that helps you overcome it. And so for you, it might be, maybe saying, I'm not going to say to myself after every date, am I going to keep going? I'm going to find somebody who I like. And then I'm going to say, I'm going to try this for at least a month, or I'm going to try this for at least 2 months. And just creating different experiments and tests that help you see, when I break my bad habits, when I overcome my patterns, what new stuff can emerge for me. And so it's really great to hear that learning about your attachment style has had that power for you.
Yeah, it's been an absolute game changer. And just to kind of pull it back then, Logan, when it comes to your experience on what you've seen with other people and what you've seen with yourself, I'm very curious, because anytime I talk to an expert in the field, I know it's a Pandora's box of questions, but we've mentioned attachment styles, we mentioned the language, and I'm curious, from your standpoint, what was the thing that, if you could go back, and the reason I asked the question about what did you wish you had known back when you were single compared to where you're at now, and with all the years of expertise and, you know, inspirational relationships and loving relationships, a lot of people that are in that starting point, similar to hearing my story for the avoiding people, it can give a little bit of inspiration to that you can come out the other side. But when you were single, what was the thing that you wish you had known?
Yeah, I mean, my story is actually similar to yours, in that it was learning about attachment theory, and specifically learning that I had an anxious attachment style. And so what happened to me was that I had this pattern where I would develop crushes on people. Maybe we would have a small fling. In the book, I talk about Burning Man Brian, this guy that I met at Burning Man. And when that person would start pulling away, I would think, oh, this is a challenge. This is a chase, right? If I want something at work, I go after what I want. If I want something, an exercise or a wellness goal, I go after what I want. But it just doesn't work the same way in dating. You don't just choose a goal and pursue it. And that not only is that often frustrating for you, but it's not pleasant for the other person. And so I was getting into these anxious avoidant loops where I was chasing someone, they were pulling away, and I kept going. I ended up seeing a dating coach, and this was really the transformation moment for me, because what I talked about with that coach was, how do I want my partner to make me feel? And when I focused on what Burning Man Brian made me feel, which was insecurity, fear, not knowing where I stood with him, anxiety, I was like, I don't want to feel that way. I want a partner who makes me feel desired, attractive, appreciated, confident. And so that helped me understand that Burning Man Brian and the excitement he was giving me was actually anxiety that I was mistaking for chemistry, and that there was somebody at work who made me feel the way I wanted to feel, which was this guy, Scott, who I had met in college 7 or 8 years before, who I had reconnected with when we were both working at Google. And I realized that I loved spending time with him. He brought out the best side of me, and I was able to turn that friendship into something more romantic. And now we are celebrating our 6th anniversary of being together. almost our 1 year anniversary of being married. And I really feel like that's where the change happened for me, saying, I'm going to stop being addicted to the sort of junk food dating of the chase that never results in what I want. And I'm going to actually focus on finding a life partner who makes me feel the way I want to feel.
Well, that gives me a beautiful transition into one of my favorite chapters, which is Fuck the Spark. So you mentioned there about Scott and that you had a relationship previously in terms of a friendship, but it grew and built. Talk about how to reject myths around or about instant chemistry. I really enjoyed this section in particular in the book as someone that's kind of fallen prey to it in the past. Explain it a little bit for people and talk about fucking the spark.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It has definitely become one of the standout chapters from the book, and I'm thrilled about that because I think it's one of the most common problems. And so, yeah, the thesis of that chapter is that our society has become obsessed with the spark, the idea of instant chemistry, that pang of connection, that feeling when you walk into a room and everything else fades and you can only focus on that person. And don't get me wrong, the spark is wonderful. I've definitely experienced it, and it's a peak life moment. But we should not be selecting our long-term life partners based on the spark. And here's why. There's three main myths around the spark that I've discovered. So the first myth is that the spark can't grow over time. That's definitely not true. A lot of times when people are around each other, whether it's at work, living in the same apartment building, being in the same group of friends, that attraction grows. And the more that you get to know somebody and the more you like them, the more that you really feel that romantic and sexual attraction. And so yes, the spark can and does grow over time. The second myth is that if you feel the spark, then it's a good thing. And from my story that I just shared about Burning Man Brian, we just know that that's not true, right? I did feel the spark with Burning Man Brian. But the truth is that the spark is often more of a reflection of how sparky that person is, how charismatic, how attractive, maybe even how narcissistic. And maybe that person gives the spark to everyone they meet. And so you're sitting there saying, there's something going on between me and Burning Man Brian, and I need to pursue this, and this is the relationship that's meant for me. But maybe every woman who meets him feels that way. And the spark is actually a sign of, you don't know how he feels about you. He's pulling away, and therefore it's giving you anxiety. And that's really one of the big lessons, is that we often mistake anxiety for chemistry. The third thing is there's a myth that if you feel the spark, then the relationship must be viable. We just know that that's not true. A lot of now divorced couples once had the spark. And so while the spark is an amazing thing, the spark can definitely fade over time. And so you don't want to enter into the wrong relationship because you met the quote unquote right way. And so the antidote for the spark, the thing that you should do instead, is go after the slow burn. And that is the person who gets better over time. That is the person who might not be initially charming, initially charismatic or dynamic, but they're reliable, they're trustworthy, they're kind, they're loyal. They're the type of person you want as a partner for decades of life. And so really learning to look past the spark and finding that good person who may take a few dates to really open up, that's how you wind up with a great long-term partner, by really investing in looking for the slow burn.
That's a line that really jumped out at me. Don't mistake anxiety for chemistry. That's such a great line. And I think there's a lot of people who will connect and resonate with that, because there's confusion around dating and around feelings and around emotional and just emotional intelligence in general, something I've been trying to upskill myself in recent years. But that line, I think, covers it. Don't mistake anxiety for chemistry for those who have gone down that path repeatedly. When it comes to choosing our long-term life partners, then what's the advice you generally recommend? You mentioned there, go for the slow burn. But for those who are in that position now where they're seeking either whatever language they're putting on it, their life-term life partner. You know, I know you say don't use the soulmate. It's the language is important. But what kind of tips would you offer for people when it comes to long-term life partners? Do you have a preference for people meeting in real life, meeting through dating apps, or what's the most recommended? Do you think it's personality dependent in terms of what works? Is it a little bit of luck, you know, preparation, meeting the right opportunity? What's been your experience when it comes to people finding their life-term long partners or lifelong partners?
Oh, yes, yes. I'd be happy to answer that. And also, I should ask you, I'm sure you've seen this in American movies, but how familiar are you and your listeners with the idea of the prom?
Oh, yeah, super familiar. Yeah.
I remember when my British cousins found out I was going to college and they were like, oh, are you going to have parties with those red cups? And there was sort of like this fascination with like red solo cups as the idea of an American party. And I was like, we do drink from red solo cups a lot. So you're not wrong.
We have the Irish equivalent here. It's called our Debs. And they have something similar in the UK. So we have it. It's just not as grandiose as the US-based prom.
Okay, great. So I'll use prom, but you can switch out Debs in your head. And so who makes a good prom date? Somebody who looks good in pictures, somebody who you want to dance the night away with, somebody who maybe you want to have sex with at the end of the night. But that is not who you should choose for your long-term romantic partner. And so in the book, the chapter is called Go for the Life Partner, Not the Prom Date. And so what I see happening in my dating coaching is that people start when they're 15, 16, whatever, looking for that prom date type person, and they don't grow out of it. At 26, at 27, they're still looking for that type of person. And so you need to make, kind of similar to what you said about understanding your own attachment style, you need to make a concerted effort to say, I know that I have this tendency to go after people who are immature or not ready to commit or unreliable. And I'm going to actually shift and focus on prioritizing different things. And that's what it means to go after the life partner. And so the life partner is the person who has some of the following traits, right? It's really important to go for somebody who's kind and somebody who's loyal. These are things that the field of relationship science tells us matter most in long-term relationship success. Also, the idea of the growth mindset, which I'm sure you are familiar with and probably have talked about on the show, is growth mindset is, do you think that life is just somebody handed you a bunch of skills when you were born and that you can't get better over time? Or do you believe that life is something that you can go after and that you can build skills in any area that you want and you can actually define the life you want? What about making hard decisions with somebody? I mean, this is your partner. This is the person who you're going to face hardship with. And are they the person who you want deciding about health issues, deciding where to move, deciding on financial things? I mean, yes, you don't talk to your prom date about how much they'd spend on a couch or a pair of shoes, but when you get older, you really want to have these financial literacy conversations with people. And then finally, what's become the most important one to me, which is, what side of you does that person bring out? And this is really something that, when I talked about the Burning Man Brian story, it's so prevalent. We focus on the chase, we focus on the wrong kind of person, and we never realize this person makes me feel depressed. This person makes me feel bad about myself. This person makes me feel de-energized. And so really, it's time to shift away from looking for the prom date, and it's time to really focus on finding that life partner.
Embarrassingly, as soon as you say that, it reminds me of, again, I suppose I probably still have a little bit of an emotional attachment to this, even though it's definitely a past version of myself. But one of the things I used to do was I would always focus on the prom date. So I was very, when I think of value ladder, I had looks very, very high up on my value ladder at the expense of basic things, kindness, personality, sense of humor. And one of the ways I got over that in recent years, now again, that's not to say anything, like I think that my partner is the most beautiful person in the world, but when it comes to my original ability to get over my prom date scenario, that I had to ask myself, would I be with this person if nobody else saw me? And that eliminated, I'd say, 99 out of 100 potential dates of people that I would consider being with. And that's something I had to do in my mid-20s. And it, again, when you're thinking dating, you're thinking filtering. Like, what's your filter? What are you looking for? And that one question eliminated about 99% of all potential possibilities for me, because if nobody saw me with them, I'm like, well, I wouldn't be with this person. And I think, yeah, it connected with me when you said it there. And I think it's an important thing for people to realize that you need to have a filter with dating, which kind of gives me a little bit of a shoehorn into what I want to touch on now, which is dating and breakups, which is kind of a offbeat to what we talked about, but your book covers everything. When it comes to dating, what, and a particular section that I loved was about whether to go on a second date, because I don't think first dates are that difficult. A lot of people will go off attraction or off physical appearance, but how would you recommend we decide how to go on to a second date?
Well, first of all, Brian, you know, thank you for studying the book. Thanks for being so serious about it. I really appreciate it. And I would also say, you know, breakups are something that I'm really passionate about, and I wish people asked me more about them in interviews, because truly one of the best ways to get more people in the world into great relationships is by helping them get out of bad ones. And a lot of people are stuck in these bad or mediocre relationships, and they're staying for the wrong reasons, and they don't understand if they should stay or if they should go, and is this a deal breaker or is this a pet peeve? And so, yeah, though, I'm excited to have a breakup conversation with you and discuss some of my research there, specifically in terms of first and second dates. So a lot of people go on first dates and they're in this evaluator mode. Are you good enough for me? Do I like you? You know, do you check all the boxes on my checklist? And they're very much saying, do you live up to my standards? And when you're in this evaluation mode, it's really hard to connect. And it's really hard to relax and get to know somebody. And it feels more like a job interview than a date. And so my first rule of thumb is to tell yourself, I'm going to go on the second date as a default. I'm going to give this person another try. And what that does is a few things. First of all, it helps you relax on the date. Because if you say, I'm not here to evaluate you, I'm just here to have an experience with you, that really helps you slow down, be present, be in the moment, and really connect as opposed to evaluating. The other thing it does is it makes it easier to find those slow burn people, because if we've established that a lot of people just don't shine on the first date, a lot of people are not sparky, then what ends up happening is that you are able to find those diamond in a rough people. You are able to see past the shiny exterior and actually say, okay, when I peel back the layers, who's there? Who is this person I'm getting to know? And so since the book has come out, I've heard so many stories from people who say, I went on a date with this guy. I wasn't sure about him. I happened to be talking to my mom. I told her I wasn't going to see him again. My mom said, oh, he sounds great. You should see him again. And now I'm married to that person. And so really, going on the second date as a default is a great way to expose yourself to the type of person who takes more time to open up.
That's great advice, that you have your second date as the default for the whole host of benefits that you mentioned there. If we transition forward then, let's say there's people listening to this who are in a, I won't say toxic relationship, but definitely in a relationship with the person who they're not supposed to be with. And I've been in this and had this example, partly down to not having the growth mindset at the time, where it's kind of just, you know, satisfying, where you're like, yeah, it's fine. Well, just, you know, the victim, the mentality of, yeah, it's okay syndrome that I call it. You know, it's not great, but it's not that bad. It's just, it's okay. For those that are in relationships and potentially want to get out of it for whatever reason, how would you recommend people decide if they should or shouldn't break up with somebody?
Yeah, I mean, this is a major, major decision. And when people come to me with help, should I stay or should I go? I take that decision very, very seriously, because I'm holding their relationship in my hands. I'm holding their partner's relationship in my hands. And it is something big, and it's a lot of responsibility. But the first thing that I try to do is I try to understand, how has this person shown up in relationships in the past? What do they tend to do? Are they the type of person I call a hitcher? Somebody who gets into relationships, stays for a long time, probably stays past the point where they're really invested or getting anything from the relationship. Or are they a ditcher? Are they a type of person who goes from 3-month relationship to 3-month relationship, always seeking that new relationship high, always pursuing that honeymoon period? And really, is this the type of person who hasn't actually invested in getting to know someone and in learning how relationships change over time? Are they really always just seeking the next new thing? And so in the beginning, I try to get a sense for myself of, are they a hitcher or a ditcher? Then I ask them a few different questions. I try to understand, is there something else external going on? Is there something where, you know, maybe your parent is sick and this is affecting the way that you're showing up in the relationship. Did your partner just lose their job? Is it making it harder for them to be present? You know, what else is going on? And is that something external and temporary that could get back to normal? Because you don't want to leave a great relationship just because it's going through one of those inevitable rough patches. Then I ask them my favorite question, which is the wardrobe test. And so, Brian, I don't know, are you dating anyone right now? Is this something you talk about on the show?
Oh, yeah, I don't touch about it too much on the podcast, but yeah, I've been in a relationship for a while.
Okay, well, I'll ask you this question and you can say yes or no. I know you read the book, so you're familiar, which is, if your partner wore a piece of clothing in your closet, what would they be?
Oh, it's gym gear.
Really? Yeah. Well, tell me what that means to you.
Loose, easy, reliable, know what you're getting, driven exactly towards what, you know, you're getting what you signed up for. Like, a lot of things came to me when I got to that section of the book. But yeah, that's kind of what comes to mind with me when it comes to the wardrobe question or the closet question.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And I'll just share with your listeners that I'm looking at your image on Skype, which is you in a tight fitting white gym shirt, and you look very happy and very fit. And so I can see that when you're presenting yourself to the world, you're choosing athletic gear because this is your personality. This is your persona. This is the pursuit of your goals. And so saying that your partner is gym clothes sounds great to me because it means that you have found someone who makes you feel your best and who makes you feel closer to achieving what you want. And that, I think that's a very lovely answer. When I speak to people who are considering breakups, sometimes I hear not so lovely answers. I hear, my boyfriend is a sweater. He itches me. My boyfriend is a wool sweater. He keeps me warm, but ultimately the sweater is itchy and I have to take it off. Or my girlfriend is a schlubby t-shirt that I might wear to the gym, but I wouldn't want anyone to see me in. And sometimes when people say this stuff, you know, their mouth hangs open and they can't believe what they've said, because what's magical about this question is that it helps you become more abstract. It helps take you out of your brain and weighing the pros and cons. What if we have to split the apartment? What if I have to buy a new car? And it actually just takes you into your gut. How do I feel about this person? How do I feel about the relationship? And so sometimes that's really what people need. It's that moment of recognition with themselves of what's actually going on. And so the wardrobe test question, although it's not something that I've scientifically proven with thousands of interactions, I can tell you anecdotally through my work and through the book, it really helps a lot of people focus on, should I stay or should I go? And so that's the first part of the work. It's understanding if you want to stay in the relationship and invest in it, or if you want to end the relationship and move on. Once people do this, the next step is the breakup itself. And this is very challenging, but what I recommend people do is what they would do if they were trying to hit any goal of theirs, because now breaking out of the relationship is their goal. And so you have to make a plan. You have to be thoughtful about when and where you're going to do it. You have to understand, where are you going to go after the breakup? Who's going to take care of them? You know, are we going to be in touch? How am I going to get my stuff from their place? Whatever it is. And so really thinking about breakups as something where you can put thought into the plan and you can be as compassionate as possible by actually thinking through how you're going to do it, what you're going to say, and making sure that afterwards you give them space to move on instead of sticking around trying to be their friend, because that often holds people back.
That's such great advice for people. And I think for anybody, because breakups, as you said, are so difficult and so hard to navigate when you're in them. I know from personal experience that when you're going through it, anything that gives you a little bit of guidance, and that's why I love this section, even though it didn't connect with me emotionally now for obvious reasons. I remember thinking when I was reading it, I wish I had this kind of map of how to get from A to Z when it comes to navigating a breakup and even, you know, overcoming heartbreak. You talk about reframing the breakup as a gain, not a loss, which I think is all about that growth mindset and kind of rewiring your mindset around it. But I want to bring this conversation full circle before we finish, Logan. Talk about how to decide if you should get married and how to build a relationship that lasts.
Yes, Brian, great question. And really, I mean, I think a lot of my themes are coming through. This has been such a good conversation. But one of them is this idea of intentionality. What do you want? How do you go after it? How do you design the life you want, the love you want? How can you be in the driver's seat of your world? And part of that is choosing the partner who's going to be great long term. And so when you're thinking about getting married, I recommend that people have a series of conversations. And so in the book, I describe what you should ask about, what you should ask, but there's things you should ask yourself. You know, can I see myself with this person for the long run? Can I imagine going through milestones with them? Have I had tough conversations with them? And how have we been able to manage conflict? And really, you start with yourself and you have that check-in and you say, is this the right person for me? Or am I maybe lying to myself? And then if you decide to move forward from that, then you have a series of conversation with your partner and you talk about things like, where do you want to live long term? Do you want to have kids or not? What religion do you want to raise our kids in? How do you want to manage financial things? And maybe somebody listening is like, oh, that's so unromantic. Like, I want to talk about engagement rings. I don't want to talk about prenuptial agreements. But the truth is that when we are in those early stages of love, when we are on the drug of love, hormones are taking over our brains. It's basically like we're on something like cocaine, and it actually, love affects the same region of the brain as certain hard drugs do. And the point is that you need to override some of those intense feelings of connection to actually ask yourself, is this the person for me long term? And are we headed in the same direction? And so whether you follow my questions or you write your own, it's really important to have those conversations with people and to not make assumptions that you're headed in the same direction. Because oftentimes when relationships don't work or people get divorced, it's because they assumed that they were aligned in a lot of places where they were not.
Would you, this is I don't want to have it as a loaded question, but and a cliche, but would you say communication is the key in that? Or is it a case of just having those conversations? What have you seen as a, and it's a, the final question that I'm very curious to just pick your brain on, what's been the common trend with successful relationships for you? Has it been that over communication on ideas, or is it something else?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I can answer that question in a number of ways, but first I'll say this is true for any aspect of life, but in order to achieve your goals, you need to start by figuring out what you want. Do you want to be in a monogamous relationship? Do you want to get married and have kids within the next 2 years? Really spending that time alone to say, who am I? What do I want? The next thing is communication, and it's talking to your partner or your potential partner about this and saying, I'm clear on my goals. What are your goals? And are we aligned? And that piece is very important because we need to model the behavior of, I know where I'm going. Do you know where you're going? And are we going in the same direction? The third piece is actually listening to the other person's response. This is something that people get wrong all the time. They say, I know I'm looking for something serious. Are you? The other person says, well, I just got out of a relationship and I don't want to commit too soon. And then you sort of ignore your own goals and you say, oh yeah, yeah, that's fine. I'll sit around waiting for you. And so it's not enough to just know what you want and ask for it. You actually have to listen to the person's reaction and see if you are on the same page. And don't allow yourself to ignore the signs. If somebody says to you that they're not ready, believe them the first time. Don't try to change them. Don't assume that you'll convince them otherwise. Move on and find somebody who wants the same thing as you. And so when it comes to finding a partner, it's really important to be clear on your own goals and then ask the other person what their goals are.
I love that. What I'm hearing you say is clarity on what you want, communication with them, and then listen to their response. I think that is such, that's a brain tattoo that I'm going to keep on my head and keep on my mind just as a way to navigate through, you know, my relationship and just advice that I'll even offer people. The advice will be that I send them to your book, Logan, but when it comes to like friends and conversations with people, Logan, I have enjoyed this conversation so much. As I said, I've been dying to have this chat since I did a proper deep dive into your book over the weekend. Can you tell everybody listening where's the best place for them to pick up the book and check it out, and where can they follow you online? Where's your best social media platforms, the website, any of those links you want to give now?
Absolutely. And Brian, thank you for being such an engaging, well-prepared interviewer. I really enjoyed our conversation. And yes, of course, people can check out the book. It's called How to Not Die Alone. It's available wherever great books are sold. They can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Logan Urie. If people are curious about their dating tendency, are you a romanticizer, a maximizer, or a hesitator? They can take the quiz on my website, loganurie.com.
And for everybody listening, I will link everything Logan said there in the show notes on BrianKeenFitness.com and in the description wherever you're listening to podcasts. So click on through, pick up the book, check out the quiz, follow Logan on Instagram. Logan, thank you so much again for your time. Thank you so much for writing the book. And thank you so much for this conversation. I've got so much from it personally. So thank you again.
Yay. All right. It was my pleasure. Have a good one.
So there you have it. Logan Urie on dating, attachment styles, how to break up with someone and finding love. This was a very enjoyable conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. I learned a lot even through this one. I am definitely going to be going back on it several times, and I'll be making notes and references in the book. As I said, I did a deep dive at the weekend, but I'll definitely use it as a reference point going forward. As always, if you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to leave a review. If you're on iTunes, hit that review button, hit that rating button. That helps massively with the podcast. If this is your first time listening, hit the follow or subscribe button for podcasts coming every single Monday. And if you want to find my top three takeaways from today's podcast, just head over to the website, BrianKeenFitness.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and sign up to my weekly newsletter where I break down my top three takeaways, and you get it in your inbox on Thursdays at lunchtime. And it's going to be an interesting one this week. I need to think on this one because there's a lot of food for thought with today's episode with Logan. So that's everything from this week. Catch you all next Monday.